On today's show, Kevin Durant, still not traded, still not happy. We're going to talk about why what he wants might not be feasible, plus how the league plans to honor the late Bill Russell and the teams most likely to take a leap next season. All of that and much more coming up next.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On NBA, your daily podcast on the NBA. However you may be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or on your favorite podcast app, thank you so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Adam Mares. We'll get to the Kevin Durant in a second and look at which teams have the best chance to take a leap this coming season later on in the show. But let's start with the news that the NBA plans to retire Bill Russell's number six for all 30 teams, becoming the first player in league history to have his jersey retired league-wide. What do you think about the honor, Adam?
I mean, I think it's pretty cool. Bill Russell, obviously his fingerprints are all over the NBA just in terms of what a figure he was as a basketball player and as a person. He's one of very few players who extends all the way to present day, meaning he had an impact on players today. He was a culturally important person even today, and he was also an important player 5-6 decades ago for the NBA. So he's a guy that is a through line for the entire history. And I think it's a really great gesture. If you talk about the most important players, specifically players to ever come into the NBA, Michael Jordan, Magic Larry, you start to Bill Russell, not far behind. Once you get back there, you can start to talk about all these other players. So I think it's a really cool gesture. And lastly, I don't think there's anybody that disapproves of this. Like, Bill Russell's a guy that I think everybody kind of understands his impact and his importance. So it's not a controversial figure or a controversial decision. I think everybody sort of honors and enjoys this for Bill Russell.
So also just worth noting, players already wearing number six are sort of grandfathered into this, right? So LeBron James, obviously the most famous number six wearer right now, playing for the Lakers, could still wear number six with the Lakers. Up until basically he stops wanting to wear it. But no new player can take on the number six now. You said that everybody's pretty much on board with this, all right? I'm just going to say this first and foremost. This is not an anti-Bill Russell take, all right? This is not an anti-Bill Russell take.
Come in hot on Friday. Okay.
This is kind of silly. Come on. You're going to retire one number for every single team for the rest of NBA time? It just seems a little ridiculous, okay? And again, not an anti-Bill Russell thing. He should be honored. There are ways to honor him, and there's things that we could do. Like, I just, come on, really? You're going to retire a single, nobody else gets to wear the number six ever again? That seems a little ridiculous.
One of the things that's funny about this is it's a pretty important number. Like, there's been some great number sixes throughout history.
It's a cool looking number. It'd be one thing if Bill Russell was just out there wearing like number 56. Nobody wants to wear that number. It wouldn't matter.
Then you would have been all for it. If we were retiring number 62, like, we'd be like, okay, nobody wants this one. Let's retire it. But it is number six. It's an important one. I understand your pushback. I understand the idea of like it being a little silly or token this or that. I don't mind it though. This is what I'm saying is, how many players could you have said if they would have retired? And I know there's advocates for it. We should retire 23. Like, Michael Jordan was that good. The Miami Heat retired 23.
Yes, they have.
Jordan. Like, there's these things and they are a little silly. Michael Jordan, I would have understood it. Magic, there was Magic and Larry. So, like, to me, they're two players. You're not going to retire both 32 and 33. Bill Russell's the only other guy I think that fits this criteria. Like, the only other player besides Michael's 23 that I could see them doing this for. So, again, it's a little bit of a gesture. The NBA, I think, needs things that tie themselves to past, present, and future. Yeah. And Bill Russell's one of the few guys that I think can do that. And I think this is a bit of an effort of trying to do that in our league.
It is. I feel like there was definitely some better ideas there if they would have just given it a little bit of time. Whatever. Speaking of bad ideas, this is from Substack writer Mark Stein, NBA Insider, reporting on Thursday that there is, quote, a growing belief among rival teams that despite issuing the ultimatum, Kevin Durant knew that Joe Tsai had no intention of firing Sean Marks and Steve Nash. This, of course, on the heels of the Athletic report that Kevin Durant did just that in a face-to-face meeting in London with the Brooklyn Nets owner. Again, going back to Mark Stein's report here, one theory is that Durant has begun trying to create as much behind-the-scenes discord as possible in hopes that it will lead to the Nets to lower their asking price and finally trade KD out of exasperation. Adam, what do you think of the latest reports on Kevin Durant?
First of all, my first thought is it speaks to where we are as a league that this wild conspiracy theory is being reported by Mark Stein and like might actually have a lot of legs to it. Like he might, I'm not calling out Mark Stein for anything. I'm saying it's crazy that this is a logical thing that could be happening. This meta multi-layered thing, maneuver that we're like, maybe he did this with ulterior motives and this chain of things. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, it kind of tracks like, everything happened so quickly. Kevin Durant gives the report, Joe, that afternoon. It was a couple hours that it was. It happened so quickly that you do wonder, hey, maybe this is the case. The only thing that I push back on is Kevin Durant signed an extension without any. He did not have a player option. I'm not sure he's as savvy a politician as, say, a LeBron James.
Right.
And I'm not sure he's a savvy enough politician to be thinking on, not be thinking, but to be operating on these levels that he's doing that. I've never... KD has jumped teams. He's done the different stuff. But I've never thought he has been this multi-layered, I'm trying to plant a seed of discord so they do this.
Right.
So I don't know that I necessarily buy it, even if it's plausible.
Yeah, look, I understand the idea of let me just make the situation as awkward as possible so that we just don't want to do this anymore. But yeah, the idea of Kevin Durant showing up to training camp and being coached by Steve Nash, who he pretty much – through these reports said he wants fired, and whether or not he actually wants Steve Nash fired or he just wanted to demand Steve Nash to be fired in order to prove a point still must not feel great for Steve Nash. He's like, all right, either you want me fired or you're throwing me under the bus to get what you want. Either way, that doesn't feel super awesome for me. And so right. Like I understand that that's maybe what Kevin Durant's motive is, but I'm with you. It just doesn't feel that thought through. It doesn't feel all that impactful, and it kind of feels like in a room and in a building full of alpha dogs, Steve Nash is a two-time MVP, man. Like, he's not somebody that's just going to go away quietly. Sean Marks also played in the league. Joe Tsai is a billionaire person. You think he hasn't crushed some skulls on his way up through the ladders? Like, this is a building full of alpha dogs, and I don't know that Durant is just going to be able to bully his way into getting what he wants when you're right. He kind of put himself in a corner here by signing that four-year contract and expecting everybody else around him, Kyrie, at the time, James Harden, to also sign those extensions. They ultimately didn't. James Harden's on a new team. Kyrie, we'll see.
James Harden on a team that's been singled out as a potential suitor for Kevin Durant, which to me, hilarious.
Yeah. Tobias Harris at a first-round pick, straight up.
I mean, so but here's the thing. If he is doing that, if he is trying to get lower, the key term for you was lower the price, like, you know, yeah, kind of emphasize this. There's something to it. I mean, Carmelo famously, in the early days of player empowerment, in the early days of demanding trades and forcing your way to someplace, he did not think this through. Trade to the Knicks trade all their good players, you effectively force your way to a situation that's going to be bad. It would be smart of Kevin Durant to try to lower his trade value enough so that whatever team he gets traded to is still very good. So it actually makes sense in this really messed up way for the league,
right,
that he should be trying to lower his trade value so he arrives in a favorable situation.
I just don't want to – like, there are so many different versions of this. You've got James Harden just showing up to Houston out of shape, late to training camp and all these things. Yeah. You've got Ben Simmons claiming this, that, and the other and not showing up to practices and training camp and holding out and all this stuff. Like, are we really going to add this?
Cell phone in his pocket? Right. Do you remember Ben Simmons had the cell phone in his pocket during practice? Like, come on.
We're really going to add the – I'm demanding my coach and GM get fired, but I don't really mean it page to the playbook here of superstars trying to force their ways out. Like, this to me is just annoying. It's another step in the wrong direction. I'm all for player empowerment, but I'm also just for generally like respecting people who you work with and not being a jerk. And it just feels like the only way for these players to get the empowerment that they're seeking is to be a jerk. And maybe that's a problem with the system. Maybe it's a problem with this empowerment / entitlement thing. I don't know what it is. I just know it doesn't feel great, and it doesn't, it just sort of feels icky on the surface. And I don't know. We've just got to get to a point where there's better ways to do this.
We all know that during the process, Hinkie was sort of, it was very, the NBA wanted him to be fired and he ended up getting fired. But yes, the NBA wanted that. I would love if the NBA wanted the Brooklyn Nets to be forced to stay together. Like, no, there's no trades. Nothing's happening. You all have Steve Nash, you have to coach it. Kevin Durant, you have to play it. You have to play with Ben Simmons. You force him back in group chat. Like, hey, no, can't get out of this group chat. You have to be in it.
Right.
I want the NBA to say, like, I want them to step in the background and say, oh, this has to happen.
I like it. Just let it happen. And at the end of the day, I don't know what's the better situation for Kevin Durant at this point, man. Like, you weren't really thrilled about playing with James Harden. And now all of a sudden you're cool playing with him in Philadelphia. I don't know. It just, none of this makes any sense. I have no idea how any of this stuff is going to end. Anyway, let's switch topics. Coming up, which team will follow in the Memphis Grizzlies' footsteps and take a Memphis Grizzlies-like leap next season? We'll talk about a few teams in each conference. That's next here, Locked On NBA. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your betting needs. Find all of your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf in the NFL preseason starting this weekend. So you're going to want to check out those odds. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sport wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. Back here with Locked On NBA. Adam, I wanted to take a minute and just look ahead to next season. The Memphis Grizzlies last season were one of the big stories of the league, right? This middling sort of bubble team in the Western Conference. Just a bunch of young players ascend and they climb up the rankings. Memphis wins 56 games last year, the number two seed in the Western Conference. Great final, semi-conference final series against Golden State, who, of course, would go on to win the championship. The Grizzlies have now sort of become the model, I think at least, for a lot of young teams trying to make that leap, right? And so what we want to do is take a look at some of the different teams in each conference and rank them. Which teams could potentially take that Memphis Grizzlies-like leap next season? Let's start in Memphis's own conference. Let's start with the West.
Okay. So if you look at it, Memphis was ninth 2 years ago, and they were second last year. That's a seven-spot jump.
Okay.
So that's what we're looking at. And I put context importantly because there are some teams that are going to be on this list that you're going to say, well, they wouldn't sneak up on anybody. But it's like, yes, but if we look at where they were last year, if they move up seven spots, it's realistic to expect them. So if we go to the Eastern Conference first, my number five team here that I have, you're going to hate this one, the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets. They were an eight seed last year. Like, they were outside. Is it possible that this team has to come together? They get Ben Simmons. They hate each other, but they're so talented that they are a top three seed. It's at least possible. There's so much talent there, and it's a zoo. I would never bet a penny on it to happen,
yeah.
But I would not be surprised if Brooklyn's forced to eat their vegetables, and it turns out they end up a top three seed or something based on the talent that's assembled.
Or if they even trade Durant and get a bunch of the stuff that they've been looking for to get back, presumably they're going to get at least a talented player or two back. So who knows what that could lead to.
This
I don't mind
gonna
choosing
happen.
Brooklyn. It's not going to happen. I will say this. If you were to play out the whole Brooklyn Nets situation, even since the James Harden trade and after 100 times, 99 of those times end up being better than what happened last year to the Brooklyn Nets.
Right.
And so the idea of, hey, it can't get worse, but who knows?
Right.
It's like based on what we were just talking about.
It might actually get worse.
All right, after Brooklyn, what do you got?
My next, the Orlando Magic. This is the ultimate shot in the dark. Now, first of all, they were 15th in the conference last year, so moving up merely would be moving up to the play-in game. Like, for them to jump seven spots, that would be it. I kind of like the Magic. I kind of think they have some players. Like, they're really young last year, some injuries, but I look at their roster. You know, they've got some pieces there that I'm interested in. Of course, you know, bringing back Gary Harris. They got Wendell Carter, who's really fit in well there. You know, you've got some young pieces that I think are just going to be a little bit interesting. And then they've got their cornerstone piece, years to come. They've got Franz Wagner, Jalen Suggs. Like, they've got some young guys. I think that there's a chance they surprise people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Paolo Banchero being there, if he is anything like what everybody expects him to be, if he goes on to win Rookie of the Year, then yeah, they're going to be better than they were last year. They already were young last year, and you presume guys like Jalen Suggs are only – like, Jalen Suggs wasn't terribly impressive as a rookie, but I'm still a big Suggs believer. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. And then you're going to get Jonathan Isaac back, right? And so that's a big get for them. A guy who was in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation a couple years ago before the injury. So you get him back, like you said, Wendell Carter Jr. You got Paolo Banchero out there on the wing. Jalen Suggs maybe taking another step in his sophomore season. You still got young guys like Markel Fultz there giving you some stuff. To take that leap into the play-in, it would require probably a 20-game increase in wins. But that's sort of what we're talking about, right? Like, that's kind of what – that's almost what Memphis did. So it's a huge leap, but I don't know. They also didn't want – they only won 22 games last year. So it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I think the East is really good in their top, like, seven. But there's a spot there, like one last spot that's up for grabs for some of these teams. Maybe it's the Magic. I'm not really betting on it. But they were fourth on my list in the Eastern Conference. Next up, this one's kind of interesting. The Washington Wizards. So you got Monte Morris, Bradley Beal. I think that's a very good 1-2 punch. Like, both got Monte Morris, super solid. Bradley Beal, obviously all-star caliber player. You get Will Barton and Kyle Kuzma. Both of those guys can stretch the court. They can shoot. Will Barton can handle. Gives you a true third ball handler. And then you have Kristaps Porzingis, another guy that can shoot. This bets. Five-man unit is going to be among the league's best five-out. Like, you're talking all five guys can shoot the ball. Five-out teams. Now, they're missing pieces. It's not a very complete team. But I do think they're a team that are going to be hot some nights. Kristaps Porzingis hits five threes. Bradley Beal hits five threes. You know, Monte is a very good shooter, 40% for the last couple of years. Barton and Kuzma have the ability to get hot. I just think this is a team that we're going to see win some games. They'll probably lose a lot of games they shouldn't. But they might be one of those teams that beats the Warriors in Golden State and everyone's surprised by it. And you think, hey, that's the kind of power they have. They have some firepower.
The Wizards started last year kind of looking like the team that was about to make the leap. And then obviously things tapered off. I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it with the Wizards. I understand the logic of putting them on your list. But I have not been high on the Wizards in quite some time. Basically since the Jonathan Wall and Bradley Beal years. But yeah.
So they were 11th. What would it take for them to hit the mark here? They'd probably have to be like... seventh.
Yeah, they really need, obviously the Kristaps Porzingis thing is a big factor for them. If he could be better than he was in Dallas, basically that's a good player that you have at center. They need one of the group of the Denny Avdija, Rui Hachimura kind of interesting young toolsy wings. They just need one of them to pop, and that's pretty much like the way that Desmond Bane did last year from Memphis. He just a young player just sort of popped and was able to kind of be the co-pilot with their superstar. We'll see. I mean, they're high on all those guys.
The next one I have up, number two now. So all those three teams, like, there's a chance. I'm not counting on any of them. These next two, to me, are the ones that I think are the team that can do it. And the first one is the Atlanta Hawks. A big move. You got Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. If it hits, I think it's going to hit really, really, really well as a dynamic, super quick, super good passer shooter, Trae Young. I think that it could work really well. You got John Collins, Clint Capella, DeAndre Hunter. And then they filled out their bench with some guys that, you know, have just been around. Aaron Holiday, Mo Harkless, like those guys know what to do. I kind of see them. They were great 2 years ago. They had a down year. Let me look at what they had last year. They were ninth in the conference.
Yeah.
Would you be surprised if they were like a top four team? I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, Clint Capella getting hurt last year was a huge difference maker for them defensively in a bad way. If he's healthy and if that whole team is healthy, yeah, they could definitely make a run. DeAndre Hunter, same thing. So I have no problem with Atlanta. Yeah.
And they've proven it at least once before that they could be a top four team. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if they repeat it. And the number one, I got to throw a bone to the big market listeners to us here. The New York Knicks completely remade with Jalen Brunson, obviously in mind. You bring back Julius Randle, who had a down year, but maybe has a bounce back. RJ Barrett, I think, is having a steep incline here. And then most of all, the ace in the hole nobody's talking about, future starting center for the New York Knicks, Isaiah Hartenstein. I think that this is a team that is, I mean, everybody's picking them to be the team that makes the big leap. Easy to do. They were 10th in the conference last year. This is a year where I would not be surprised if they were a great regular season team and snuck up on some people.
I have no problem with any of those. I'm going to throw one more in, and I will give a note to Toronto Raptors fans that might be listening. You won too many games last year to count. You're already good. If you're good again,
they were the fifth seed.
Yeah, you won too many games. Cleveland was in the play-in tournament. They were one of the top four seeds in the Eastern Conference for a lot of the year. Then they got hurt and then fell into the play-in tournament and had that really bad backslide at the end of this regular season. But I could see them with the young guys kind of taking that leap again. They won 44 games. Could they win another 10 games? Could they win 54 games? I mean, The Miami Heat led the conference with 53 games, but I could see Cleveland eclipsing that 50 win number. Darius Garland's only going to get better. Evan Mobley's awesome. He's only going to be more awesome. Jared Allen, hopefully healthy the entire season. I'll throw Cleveland in there too. I think they would count.
I think they count too. They're the tough one because they were like a top five team last year. And then, like you mentioned, the injuries disguised a little bit of that. So could they be the same team they were last year, but it looks like a leap? That's kind of why I didn't add them to my list. I'm kind of counting them as a good team already. But to your point, they didn't finish in the standings very high, and there is a chance they're much higher this year.
Let's do the Western Conference next here on Locked On NBA. All right, back here with Locked On NBA. We're doing our teams that most likely to take a Memphis Grizzlies-style leap next season, a big leap in the conference standings. We already did the Eastern Conference. Had some surprises back there. What's in store for us in the Western Conference, Adam?
So, like I started with Brooklyn the last time in the Eastern Conference, I'm going to start with the Brooklyn of the West, which was
the Lakers?
Yeah, with the – or actually, are we going east? Did I mix up my two? Was I going back and forth here?
You were doing the Eastern Conference all last segment, even though I asked you for the West.
Okay,
but
perfect.
I wasn't going to call you. I asked for the West, and you just started doing Eastern Conference teams. I was like, whatever.
I just realized that. All right, we're in the Western Conference now. You go east to west. The Los Angeles Lakers, to me, again, I'm not counting on it, but they were so bad. West, they were the 11 seed. Is there a chance that a LeBron James, Anthony Davis team is like a top four or five seed in the West? Of course there is. Sure. I'm not counting on it. But by virtue of how this is supposed to operate, they could do much better than the 11 seed if they ever get it together.
Look, I like the offseason moves relative to what that is that they were able to do, right? Like, you know, based on what they were last year versus this year, I think the team weirdly improved. There are reports recently that they are, like, LeBron James sat down with Darvin Ham and that whole group and said, hey, we're going to run the offense through Anthony Davis. And LeBron was apparently and reportedly on board with that. I'll believe that any team with LeBron James on it runs through another player, not LeBron James, when I see it. But if they can get Anthony Davis more involved, Anthony Davis is healthy, has more of a bounce back year. I think everybody would consider last year, Russell Westbrook was dominating headlines as the most disappointing star in the Lakers. Anthony Davis did not have a great year either. So if he could bounce back and be back to basically being a top 10 player, why not? Why couldn't the Lakers take a leap? LeBron's still good.
LeBron's still way better than Anthony Davis. What are you thinking trying to run it through Anthony Davis? This sounds like a horrible plan.
We've heard this so many
times. You know what's funny? You were talking about Kevin Durant ulterior motives. This, to me, sounds like a LeBron James. Oh, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, no problem. Let's see how that goes. Sure. Why not?
Not running through Russell Westbrook, that's for sure.
maybe it's LeBron's way of saying, see, Russell Westbrook, I'm willing to take a back seat, therefore you should too, before then no longer taking a back seat when that doesn't work with Anthony Davis. All right, enough Lakers talk. I've filled my quota. Portland Trailblazers, another team that's sort of de facto here because we know they're better than what they show. They were the 13th best team in the West last year. They're retooled, rehealthy. I kind of pencil them in as a playoff team, maybe play in, but Damian Lillard teams, when healthy, almost always overperform their regular season expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Portland. I like their moves. Do I think that they're a championship team? No. Do I think that what they did in the offseason helps them get back into the playoff picture? Yeah, I do, and I'm with you. Damian Lillard's a superstar, and I think we forget that. This is a guy who is always one of the best 11, 12 guys in the NBA by any measure. And then he was hurt last year. He was hurt before he stopped playing games and wasn't even playing up to his own standards. So look, is that aging? Are we kind of entering the next phase of Damian Lillard? I don't know. But if Damian Lillard can be anything like what he was, a couple of years ago, and they round out that rotation with Jeremy Grant and some other of these additions that they made, yeah, I like Portland. I think they're ready for a leap.
I worry about their depth, especially in a year where Damian Lillard was injured so much. You have Anthony Simons there, although I don't love the Lillard-Simons defensive backcourt if that's your starting backcourt. But I don't love the depth. I mean, Gary Payton's very good. You got Drew Eubanks as your backup center. Yeah. They're vulnerable.
The difference between them and a team like Memphis last year is that Memphis got into the playoffs as the number two seed, and we actually – not a lot of people thought that they could make the finals, but as the playoffs kind of went along, we started to believe in the Grizzlies a little bit more. I don't see us ever getting there with the Trailblazers, but still, they're apt for a leap probably.
these next teams, I think Portland could make a leap, so they're in the list. But these next three are really on the list for me. And this is, I'm the only one on this island. I don't know. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Okay. The Sacramento Kings.
I'm with you. I have them on my list. Let's go. Let's talk about Sacramento. Let's do it.
The 11 seed last year. So could they be a play-in team? Could they be even a playoff team that like wins the play-in? De'Aaron Fox, DeMontis Sabonis is a very good 1-2. In my opinion, they did get a fair shake. Like last year, obviously joining at the deadline and not getting a great opportunity. I think those two guys can be a great building block. And then you talk about, are you built well around them? Kevin Huerter, to me, an A-plus floor spacer, role player, knows what he's doing. Harrison Barnes, exact same way. You got Keegan Murray there. He's the real wild card because you need him to kind of step up. But if not, you got Rashawn Holmes who can also step in and play some of those minutes. You have Terrence Davis who's played big before. You got Malik Monk and Davion Mitchell who are like opposites of each other as your backup 1-2. One elite defense, one elite scoring. I just look at that roster and I go, I kind of buy it. I kind of buy that they are better or as good as a lot of these. We just talked about Portland. Portland has better high-end talent, Damian Lillard. But do they have the depth? Do they have as many good pieces? I'm not so sure. I'm buying the Sacramento Kings. I can't believe I'm saying that.
You and I are on the same page. I'm so glad you brought up Sacramento. Here's my first official prediction of the 2022-2023 season.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
The Sacramento Kings will make the playoffs.
Wow.
The streak will officially be over.
Never make your first prediction Sacramento Kings success. That's just a rule of thumb.
It's a bad start for me. But I really like Keegan Murray. I loved what I saw at Summer League. I know that doesn't mean a whole lot, but the dude, I think he's going to be able to make some sort of immediate impact. They're really versatile. They could go small. They can even trend big. The De'Aaron Fox, DeMontis Sabonis thing, to your point, that was a good two-man game post-All-Star break, but nobody was watching the Sacramento Kings because nobody ever watches the Sacramento Kings, so not a lot of people knew. I also really like the Mike Brown hiring. I think that's a guy who can just come in and be the adult in the room that they've needed. He's not trying to prove himself. He's not trying to overcompensate for anything like some previous coaches that they had. This is a guy who's probably unfairly blamed for head coaching failures at previous stops to a point, right? And he's learned a lot under Steve Kerr and with Golden State over the last few years, even stepping in for Steve when you know Steve was dealing with the back issues and did a good job coaching that team. So I just think that those years were really good for Mike Brown. And I think with a young team like Sacramento and with some people who know him and Harrison Barnes, they just signed Quinn Cook on Thursday, I believe. So there's some buy-in maybe already in that locker room. I don't know. They're versatile. They're deep. I really like their additions. I've been sort of waiting for Sacramento to break out. I'm going to predict it. It's the leap. This is the year of the leap.
Sacramento Kings. Wow. We're both on board. This is not a good feeling. No. number two and number one and two to me are pretty obvious because there are key differences here. Number two for me was Minnesota Timberwolves. Yep. They, of course, were in the play-in last game, seventh seed. They make the big move for Rudy Gobert, but it's not just that. You also get a year older, wiser, better from Karl Anthony Towns. You get a year older, wiser, better for Anthony Edwards. You get Jaden McDaniels. I think they have a good team. Top to bottom, like 1 through 5, I like all of their players. And then you go to the bench and you get guys like Austin Rivers, Kyle Anderson, Naz Reid. Those are just guys that can do their job. They're not great players, but they're not bad bench players. They're going to have a solid rotation. I think they have a good coach. To me, I would not be surprised when we look at, is Minnesota one of the three best teams in the West next year? I don't think anybody will say that, but I think they could be like the Timberwolves where they're one of the two or three best records. And in the West, that might be the difference between first, second, third round.
We did separate podcasts, separate exercises, trying to project what the top 10 offenses and the top 10 defenses in the league will be next season. I had Minnesota in my, I think, at number one on offense, and I had them in my top 10 on defense. It's the recipe for regular season success, this Minnesota Timberwolves team. I'm with you 100%. I agree.
And that means the number one team is a team that was the 10 seed last year, the New Orleans Pelicans.
Herb Jones.
This is the team. This is Herb Jones. You got to know I always have to finish the show with Herb Jones. This is the team that seems the most like a lock to rise. I mean, they did not have a great record last year, 36-46. They were, as I mentioned, snuck into the play-in thanks to the Lakers trying hard not to be in the play-in. But when they start 2-16 or 2-15, something like that, horrible start. Brandon Ingram wasn't playing. No Zion all year. They make the trade with CJ McCollum halfway through the year. That team in the back half of the year was one of the best teams in the NBA, like top 8-9 teams in the NBA. I don't know if they'll be that for an entire season, but I do think that they are better than all but maybe 5 teams in the West. Like, there's only 3-4 teams that, in my opinion, better. The rest, the Portlands, the Dallases, the Memphises, those are very good teams. They probably will have a better record. Maybe we'll have a better record, but I would not be surprised if New Orleans is as good, if not better, than all of the standings.
One of the big things for the Memphis story last year was after they were in the play-in tournament 2 years ago, the vibes around that organization were so strong, right? Great vibes around the Grizzlies organization. The Pelicans, it's the same thing. Everything out of New Orleans right now is good vibes. A lot of that is because of the CJ McCollum move that they made at the deadline. A lot of people didn't agree with, didn't like, because it was a younger team. You're adding a veteran. But sometimes that stuff matters. You just need to fix your locker room. And there was all that drama with Zion Williamson. Is he going to ask out? All these things. Is he ready to go to New York? And now the vibes around New Orleans are great. You're getting a Zion Williamson back. He's posting videos, looking slimmer, 360ing dunks and, you know, at pro-ams and things like that. The vibes are good. The vibes are good, and a lot of that matters when you're talking about a team, a young team specifically, trying to make a leap. And you, like you said, they were one of the best teams in the league last year in the back half. You add Zion to the recipe. That seems like a good recipe.
Can I tell you something, Wes? I swear to God, if we did this every year, Kings, Timberwolves, Pelicans, like, that's who we're picking to surprise people. Come on, man. Like, we're going to look like fools 6 months from now.
Yeah, let's get the social people, like, do we even have those, to break out the Sacramento Kings guarantee, because that'll make freezing cold takes.
We even said the Knicks are back. Like,
we got the Knicks are back.
The Knicks are back. We played all the hits, man.
This is not going to age well. This is not going to age well. All right. Well, that'll do it for us today. Before we make any other wild predictions, remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to podcasts, for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. Until next Friday, you can find me over at Locked On Heat, and Adam is over at Locked On Nuggets. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day.